This is Rhode Island's longest running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa. Taking care of business and working overtime to help. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. I'm Don Soa. This is Tuesday, so that means it is Get Back to Basics Tuesday here on AM 790, your home of talking business. And since it is Get Back to Basics Tuesday, with me is my partner, Donna Soa Allard. Thank you, Donna. Nice to have you. By the way, I wanted to thank you for filling in for me yesterday. I was down in New York City being busy.
And I say, what is the point of having a kid in the business if you can't get her to cover every now and then, right?
Because right around the time you were doing the show, I was also, we were being deluged with snow, with a summer rainstorm and thunder showers, and trying to get out of the city and under those conditions with areas as you're getting over towards the FDR Parkway with literally a foot of deep of flooding puddles and everything, getting through. And of course, everybody.
And you were doing it like at rush hour.
Yeah, I was right at rush hour. I was leaving the city shortly after 5 o'clock, when you went on the air.
You know, for a guy who's a planner by profession, that wasn't very good planning for travel.
Yeah, I know, but I was working around the schedule of activities we had during the course of the day. So that was really about the earliest. As one person suggested to me, they said, well, you know, maybe you should just stay in town, have some dinner, and then leave it around 7 or 7.30. But, of course, get home then at midnight or 11.30 or whatever, you know, having to face that. Ultimately, then, that might have been a good idea. Who knows?
That wouldn't work so well, though, with your early workout schedule now.
Well, Tuesdays,
you rise early on a Tuesday.
Getting up early enough to go to the gym before work. And then, of course, you know, being the boss over at work, you've got my schedule so crazy on Tuesdays that it's a nutty thing to do. But at the end of the day, I always love the idea that on a full day like that, having started the day at the gym, then had meetings all day, you know, and had a very full calendar, and then come to here to Wampanoag Trail to do the Money Talk program with my daughter that's not a bad day when you really tally it all up.
It's a full day, I'll tell you that.
You know,
good job.
we get so many questions. I mean, you since for the last few years since you started doing the Money Talk Get Back to Basics show, a lot of the inquiries we get either on the website or people calling in questions asking us to, you know, you have a topic which may be very specific or sometimes even a little bit, confusing, but people tend to think like we often talk in percentages. Where I said jokingly, yeah, advisors talk in percentages. What's the percentage return? But real people, real investors, real clients talk in dollars.
They absolutely do. In fact, those who tend to look at their portfolios on a regular basis. I have one very kind client. He's very sweet man, but he will tend to say, oh, I was checking it out and saw that I'm up X number of dollars, you know, month to date. I'm like, oh, we're looking at month to date and we're talking specific dollars. Because I know that that also means if the market goes through an intermittent downturn, that is to say, oh, you know, we're down X number of dollars month to date. And I always cringe a little bit because I know if I'm hearing the praise on when we're on the upswing, that I'm also going to really hear it on the downswing. And I always try to remind people that we have to think in percentages because everything is relative to what we started out with, right?
Well, the thing that got me, again, I needed a little education on it myself, again, to get into the way, and that's part of tonight's discussion on Get Back to Basics, is to start looking at the way real people think about real money. In other words, we talk about financial planning. We talk about investing formulas. We talk about, you know, the dynamics of asset allocation. But what your attitude was right. I remember in 2008, which was one of the worst recent years that we've seen in the market. And even though I remember one particular client came in and he said exactly what you just said. He didn't come in. I thought he was probably going to be feeling pretty good because he was down about 14%. And I said, given a market down 44 last year, and he's down only 14, I was wondering whether
you were waiting for a congratulations.
I'm almost, all right, a little naivete on my part, and I had no right to feel that way. But I felt maybe he was going to. Now, if he had talked to enough people, he might have had a slightly different perspective. But the interesting thing that he said to me was, he says, Well, last year wasn't a very good. Last year wasn't a particularly good year. He said, and you know, I can't be happy because his remark was, I lost $60,000. Again, back to this issue of you look at dollars. Mm-hmm. I said, lost $60,000. Now I'm over here thinking a decline of 14%. Now, of course, 14%, if it's $60,000, obviously he's got a fairly large portfolio. But I'm listening to him, and I said, now you're aware that the market dropped 44%, and some people, depending upon where they were invested, could have lost, you heard of just very, very few, but a few people lost 50%, although it would have been unique to where you were. But I said, so you're down 14% in a market that was down more than three times that, or close to three times that. And maybe I had no right to think that you could actually come in and actually be great, not grateful to me, but
happy about the situation.
But happy by the fact that you only went down 14 as opposed to being down as much as the broad market was. And he thought about it. He says, okay, I understand why you say that. But let me explain to you why I said what I did. Being down $60,000, he said, Donald, that's the highest annual income that I ever earned in all my working years was $60,000. So for me, the first thing I could think of was I lost the equivalent of an entire year's salary. And I don't think too many people could honestly look at that number and say that was a good thing.
No, and losing money never feels good, right? Oh. I mean, when you see your portfolio go down, it never feels good initially. And this is, you know, we understand math and we understand asset allocation and investments in the way that they work. But this is why when we talk to clients and when you talk to your advisors and they ask you about your feelings about money and your attitudes about money, your philosophy about money, it's important to give really honest answers, because in order for them to effectively communicate with you and for us to be able to effectively help you, we need to understand where you're coming from when we're talking about your money.
So I said to him, and I realized at that point I had to shift gears and say, and put it in a context that both he and I would agree on. And I said, well, that's the bad news is you did in fact lose the equivalent of your highest year's salary when you were working. Now you're no longer working, you're retired, and you have Social Security. He actually had a pension. He had served in the military long enough to actually have a pension coming in from the military. And he had this money that we were working with was a combination of an old company profit sharing plan that is now a 401k plan that had been rolled over, and this is now going to be, this was the money he was looking at when he looked at that. And I said to him, I says, well, the good news is we allocated your portfolio not based upon any specific expectation of what was going to happen in the market on any given day, or any given week, or any given month, as we just saw in the fourth quarter of last year, which was the worst quarter we'd seen. And that quarter created most of the decline that the market talked about. I said, the good news is your portfolio is allocated based on who you are financially at this point in your life. And that's why I was sort of pleased that it reacted the way that it was supposed to. Limit your downside when there was a downside. Yet when the market does do well, as it turns out as it would in 09, 10, 11, in the subsequent recovery years, you are in the market to recover, which means we didn't pull out of the market. We didn't pull out of that allocation because he was down 14% or down $60,000.
And pulling out or selling, that's what would have actually solidified a loss. We're saying he lost money, but the fact is his portfolio experienced a temporary decline.
Well, in the end, we agreed.
Could grow again,
you're right.
Right?
In the end, I says, can we agree that you have experienced a temporary decline in value, but you didn't actually lose anything?
There aren't less shares, right? Yeah. There weren't less shares. They were just worth less at the moment.
So, again, it was all about psychology, but it deals with the kind of things we're talking about tonight on the Get Back to Basics show, and that is people's perception about money, people's perception about their situation. And, of course, a very important issue is knowing whether or not you are really prepared for the retirement that you're planning for. Folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program here on AM 790. I'm here with Donna Sowa Allard and myself. I'm Don Sowa. We are CFP professionals. If you're new to the show, and the Tuesday program is about helping you understand the fundamentals of being a great financial decision maker. We'll be right back with more Money Talk. So please stick around.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we are back with the Get Back to Basics program here on Money Talk with Donna Allard and myself. I'm Don Sowa. Thanks for tuning in today. Talking about some of the how do you feel type questions as you get close to retirement. And we're using actually those frequently asked questions that we get on our own company website, right on the spot that talks about this show, the Money Talk program, that actually invites people like yourselves who are listeners to actually participate by sending in questions. We know that not everybody is either comfortable or in a good situation driving to pick up the telephone, but our producer does remind us that 437 is the local number, 437-5000. And there is a toll-free number, 888-345-0790. If you'd like to chat with us here on the air or give him a question, he'll plug it into my screen if you're not in a safe place to chat. But in the meantime, we also follow the questions, some of which we get here from the people who will call in for the show during the day, or they come on our website and actually send in an inquiry on a given topic. So today we're talking about a lot of them, and some of these interestingly talk about things we've discussed on the show as part of our fundamentals programs, but they take some of the things we think are simple fundamentals and make them even more basic. In other words, let's reduce this to real Main Street kind of discussion like you might have at the local deli or barbershop, you know, friends sitting around talking about what they're doing with their money. Donna, you were noting to me as part of the discussion that the level of confidence that consumers have now over just the last few years has actually declined in terms of their confidence about can they independently retire.
Right. I think before we went to the break, you mentioned one of the statistics from the Employee Benefit Research Confidence Study, which I talked about on last night's show, and it was that 18% feel very confident about their ability to retire comfortably. And this compares to 21% back in 2016. So the survey is released in January, or is done in January of each year. So in January of 2016, 21% were very confident. This year, only 18% were very confident. And what's interesting about that is if you look at what was going, you know, what has happened over the past year, I can't think of anything that has happened that would really drive people to feel less confident. If we look at market performance, the market has performed fantastically since January of 2016 through January of 2017. Unemployment rates are lower. So if you're still a working person, you know, unemployment's lower, you should feel technically better about your prospects, right? Inflation has continued to be very low. The Fed has enough confidence in the economy that it's felt that it could raise interest rates, albeit very slowly in very small amounts. We like that. But they've been able to do that four times in the last 18 months. And through that time period, like I said, the U.S. stock market has performed quite well. So there's, you know, if you the data doesn't seem to match up with what reality is. So that means that there's something else going on besides just people looking at their 401ks and feeling secure in their jobs.
I'm finding that one problem I have with a lot of the surveys that we hear, some of them from very notable and respected groups, including the AARP and Fidelity and others, is that they talk about statistics that are generic and across the board, mm-hmm. where you and I deal with real people who
in real situations.
Who talk about real numbers and real dollars in real situations.
Well, so other data that came back cited reasons for people not feeling terribly confident, and there none of them are ones that would surprise you. It was, you know, the increasing and unknown cost of healthcare going forward, including regular healthcare costs in retirement and potential long-term care costs. It was the rising level of debt, the fact that many baby boomers are actually bringing debt with them into retirement. That certainly puts, you know, a lot more stress on your budget in retirement. And then also the fact that we've been in a very low interest rate environment for a considerable period of time. So where that certainly benefits consumers and those who are buying and spending, it doesn't benefit you if you are a saver looking for safe, looking to get some return on safe investments or safe places to park your money like CDs or money markets or even bonds.
Now, granted, the word average, I suppose, or the mean number, the mean average number.
Averages are tough if you're talking nationally,
they're
right?
You're talking nationally, and I imagine that, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics always has averages out there for something. But realistically, I mean, every household may be a little bit different, but when you're talking averages again, based on the most recent studies you've seen, about how much money does it really take to live comfortably in retirement on an annual basis, at least in the current period?
So in terms of what's published, which doesn't jive with what I see with my own clients, but in terms of what's published, you know, if you're going to use a number of saying you need somewhere between, you know, 80 to 100% of income. Now, I know that there are people who need far, far less than 80 to 100% of their last working year's income. But if we're talking about like general America, like most of America is going to need, you know, around that 80% of income, which according to the 2014 Bureau of Labor and Statistics information comes out to about $44,680. And so if you think about that in your mind, one, does $44,680 represent 80% of your household income? So think of that first. If it does, then you probably need close to that to live on in retirement. And if it doesn't, then you probably don't need 80% of your last year's income in retirement.
So as the person who might be reading that statistic from 2014, here we are in 16, 17. But say that they allowed that number and say, okay, it says 44,680. Let's round that up to, say, 48,000. So in other words, you say that they're saying that we would need...
You just want something divisible by 12 here? Is that what you're going with?
No, okay. I mean, but the thing is, 44,680 in 2014.
I'd say 45,000.
Here we are 3 years later. You know, maybe it's slightly higher, whatever. But what percentage of that would the average person get from, say, Social Security, for example?
Yeah, so you're typically going to get up to 30% of your income from Social Security, typically, like, you know, a 20 to 30% of your income needs from Social Security.
So about one-third from Social Security, 30% to one-third, mm-hmm. that would be like $12,000 to $15,000 of the 45 you were looking mm-hmm. for would come there. So you would be telling the client if they quoted you those numbers, okay, so you're going to have to come up with the other 30.
Yeah, and they say, well, where do you come up with it? Well, some people also have a pension, like a client you were speaking about before had a pension for income, and the rest has to come from your savings and or some part-time work in retirement. That's the other factor that people will have to throw in. If I can't afford to meet my needs through my Social Security and my savings, then you have to be willing to earn some money in retirement if you can.
Now, as you start looking at those numbers, when you start looking at a number as large as, say, $30,000 or $40,000 a year, that their money machine, that's the savings account, whether it's mm-hmm. a 401k or a 403b or some sort of another outside savings vehicle, you say, well, how much money am I going to need to produce, you know, that kind of income? If I said $30,000 as an example.
At a 4% withdrawal rate?
Yeah.
You need like $750,000.
Well, whatever. I mean, it's a large number. Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is whatever
number
you...
In a sustainable way. I mean, if you want to spend it down, then you could have less than that.
Well, yeah,
and
honestly, I've been speaking for years, and I know you, we've talked about it many, many times, about whether you use a capital depletion method or a capital preservation method. I'm a strong believer...
Your preference is for cap preservation, I know.
Well, it's because of what I can't control. I don't know how long a client or myself, how long I'm going to live. So I would like to say, let's keep the money machine as solvent as it can possibly
right.
be.
And by the way, all capital preservation versus capital depletion means is if you have a capital preservation model, that means if you start with $100,000, you want to end with $100,000 roughly. You want to be earning enough to meet your withdrawal needs plus a little bit of inflation. Capital depletion means that you eventually are eating into the principal. And there's different philosophies on it, and you know, different people's needs would determine different methods.
So if I thought I could pull 5% out, which is getting to be a higher number, but I had 100,000, okay, the 100,000, 5% of that is going to be $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, okay, so maybe that can produce 100,000, I mean 100 off as using the 5,000 number, but
you used a 5% number. I'm sorry. What do you want to
know? If I use 5%, it's 5,000. So it's 400 a month. Can come out, but it's going to give me about $4,800 for the year.
Yeah.
And that means that I've took out about 4.8%. But at the end of the year, I should still have $100,000 working into the to move into the following year. So it tells you, well, if I need $800 a month, I'm going to need $200,000.
And that really matches up with every time you say money machine, is keeping that ball rolling, right? That's
I would like to see, given the fact that we're also dealing with the cost of living, that whatever amount we choose to pull out is going to leave, if I can get a 5% return or 5.5% on that money, if I'm pulling out 4%, that means that 1.5% of that principal will grow. And that will, over time, allow us to adapt to the higher cost of living.
Certainly.
So these are all strategies in retirement, the things that you need to talk about. But I guess the message that we'll go into this break with is the fact that you need to start early, early, early to save that much money over time.
You have to save a lot less on a monthly basis the earlier you start, that's for sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Money Talk with Donna Sowa Allard. Myself, I'm Don Sowa. We're going to be right back with more of the Get Back to Basics program, so please stick around.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the second half of tonight's Money Talk Get Back to Basics program. I'm Don Sowa with Donna Sowa Allard here in studio, teaching and talking about the basics and fundamentals of saving and, well, especially given that here in southern New England we have a large population of seniors, a large population of workers currently who view themselves within the next 15 years or so as potential seniors. And the wisdom and the logic that goes behind different strategies related to retirement. I remember during the breakdown, you were talking about, yes, obviously the numbers look like they're really, really big numbers, but actually taking the time to figure them out when you are young and understanding just how big retirement can be and how much money a person would have to save in their independent plan or the plan that they have through work. In other words, what's the size, pure size of an independent retirement?
If I told you that you needed to save $2 million in order to retire the way you want to retire, you might just look at me glassy-eyed and be like, all right, that's just like too big for me to even start to look at. But if instead we say, okay, let's break this down, and if you start saving early, you need to save X number of dollars per month. And maybe right now you're not making as much as you will be 10 years from now. So let's assume we're going to save a little less now and we can catch up more after. We'll increase your savings as your pay increases. You break a really large goal down into smaller attainable goals and suddenly, you know, your goal becomes a reality. And we always try to plan on the conservative side and say, you know, you want to ideally retire at 65 so you can meet Medicare, right? That's the way it is now. Well, why don't you get on pace to be saving to retire at 63? That way you've already built in some time there so that if there's a blip along the way, you know, you're kind of covered on it. And what I just said to you isn't terribly scientific. It's more psychological. It's more of a psychological thing. If you set yourself up so that you know you can accomplish your goals earlier, it gives you some wiggle room along the way as life happens. But the real point of it is you have to take larger goals and break them down into something smaller and attainable that you can wrap your head around and start early. And if you're at the point now where early would have been starting 10 years ago, well, that's okay. Today's the right day. Today's the best day for it. If yesterday was the best day, today's the second best day.
Well, the other thing, too, is that if you, in that same line, yes, starting early is critical. It's extremely helpful. It makes what sound like almost unattainable goals realistic. But another strategy that seems to work well for you, because of, we were talking about the uncertainties of life. So you said life happens. Mm-hmm. Well, that covers a lot of ills or positive things. But the real issue would be, let's say you are 30 years old now, and you're saying, well, I'm going to retire probably. I had one person say he's going to retire when he's 70. I said, well, that's fine. If you love your work, that's if you like the people you work with.
A lot can change over the course of 40 years.
Yeah, but why don't you plan instead? Rather, I mean, as we run the numbers and determine how much you're going to commit to putting away every year or with each paycheck, I mean, like you said, reduce it down to smaller numbers. Let's plan on you retiring at age 60. So you have 30 years instead of 40. That changes the numbers. It will change the size of your commitment into your 401k, say, or whatever other savings plans you have. But how good is that if all of a sudden you get down to your mid-50s in one of those, oh, life happens, events happens to you? Again, whether it deals with marriage, whether it deals with situations with your children, if you have children, some of the intermediate expenses you might be dealing with in life, like education and a few other things.
I say 50s, that sounds like paying for college time.
Yeah. I mean, they may come up as, and again, some of these things don't deal with surprises or negatives. Sometimes we're talking about opportunities. Yes, so all of a sudden, with a child, an extraordinary child, there's an opportunity to do something special because they're extraordinary, particular talent or whatever, and you want to come up with that money. Will you feel guilty? You say, well, the money that I'm putting away now on a regular basis, you're asking me to take part of that and commit it to these lessons, this particular training for a gifted athlete or a gifted artist or whatever it is that you're thinking about. But if I do that, then I'm sacrificing, or I used to say, mortgaging my independent retirement. But if you were already planning, if the amount you were putting away gets you to that independent retirement at age 60, when in fact it was your intention to work an extra 10 years anyway, probably, well, then now you can feel without that any sense of guilt, you can feel, well, maybe I can earmark part of that money towards this particular goal, this particular opportunity. Now, once you do that, you walk into Donna Allard's office and sit down with her and say, okay, here's the new reality that you and I need to talk about, and then redo your plan. Now with the expectation that I'm going to be putting this much away because of a new commitment. It's a wonderful opportunity, but it's a new commitment. And then you run the numbers and say, okay, but if that happens, then the retirement we were talking about at age 60 will now be at age 67. And you know something? That might be perfectly fine. You might find it acceptable because what it's doing is, because of the plan you made originally to retire earlier or earlier retirement, you know, this gives you choices even earlier in life, choices that you didn't really know you'd have.
And, you know, the same sort of philosophy works on the opposite end of things. I have a friend who had a considerable amount of college debt to pay off, a lot of private school loans to pay off. And she and her husband make good money and they have a beautiful family. And she was being pretty aggressive. You know, they give you the payment plan for what you need to be paying off for a certain amount of time. And she was doing double. She was doing double on it, and suddenly her work situation changed, and she was feeling really stressed out about meeting their savings goals and their goals for paying down this debt. And her advisor said to her, you know what, you're fine, because you're doubling your payments on your student loans, and you're, you know, paying significantly ahead on your mortgage. So now all you have to do is make an adjustment on those and maybe pay your actual payment for a little while on your student loans and reduce the extra that you're paying against your mortgage. But the point of that is, you know, by not stressing out your budget to the point that you can just meet the minimum goals, by kind of, you know, doing that planning ahead of going for an earlier payoff date, that left a good amount of wiggle room within the budget. So it gives you more choices on the savings side, you know, like you were describing before. And also, if you're on the younger end of things, you know, being more aggressive, paying down the debt, similarly to saving, gives you choices if, you know, things happen within life without putting you in, you know, financial peril. So
now, obviously, as investment advisor professionals and financial planners, we talk about things here on this program that, you know, as we are trying to get you to think and feel a certain way about the importance of retiring and the importance of a great many of the decisions you have to make. Yeah, sometimes you'll hear as part of our comment and our response will be, and this is the kind of conversation and discussion you should be having with your financial advisor or your financial planner. Yeah, so I realize that's sort of self-serving, because this is what we do and we're encouraging.
Actually, it's not. We would be saying have it with us if we were being self-serving.
Oh, okay. All right.
Let's be clear on that.
Given all the wonderful CFP professionals that we know who are out there, yes, we would be doing that. But I think that among the factors that are also part of this is what we have learned is, with all of the information and resources that you, as a young professional or a person who's spending time and teaching yourself to some degree, I mean, there's a lot of online information services that will help you to better understand the investment world. help you better understand how to work with your 401k or 403b at work. Hopefully the company who sponsors your plan at work is also providing information to you on that. But what we've learned, and as a professional, I've been more than 35 years in the business. Donna's over a decade herself just as a CFP professional and doing the radio now for a few, surprisingly for how quickly the years have gone by that you've been as part of this process. Well,
I think it's been 3 years.
3 years now. Yeah. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, for me to think that it's 26 years is kind of a doing the radio is amazing. But what we have learned is that so much about the relationship that you have with your financial advisor, and the reason that we encourage you to embrace that relationship and use it and take advantage of the opportunities that come with it, is because it will have such a large impact on your behavior. You know, in the decisions that you make about money, including knowing how much to put aside, understanding conceptually what setting goals, goal setting really means, but also understanding the issue of risk. How well you do as an investor has an awful lot to do with the level of risk you're assuming. And sometimes there are individuals we meet them for the first time and they've been investing, but they've been investing too aggressively. And unfortunately, when that same person who says, oh, I'm an aggressive investor, well, then how do they react when you have a bear market? How do they react when you have a major correction of the market like we saw in 2008?
They're aggressive when the market's doing well. That's what it is.
Well, yeah. And they say, oh, yeah, I have a high risk tolerance.
When the market's doing well.
Well, I remember one time a person said to me once afterwards, he said, well, yeah, I know I told you I had a high risk tolerance. What I don't have is a particularly high loss tolerance. So I said, okay, all right. But that's all part of the process. Part of what the financial planning professional or your investment advisor is trying to do for you is to keep you balanced. What I mean by that is to help you understand the risks you're taking, to help you to understand that the rate of return you're shooting for in that target that you've made for your plan, putting this much money away at this rate of return over this number of years. I said, what if that rate of return that you're using is 7 or 8%? And then here we are in 2017, and everyone out there, on the air, whatever shows you're listening to, are telling you that perhaps a target rate of 8% in a market that's in an economy that's growing at 1.8% maybe is not quite realistic, and maybe that's too aggressive or too risky. And maybe we should be talking about what is realistic for you
planning accordingly.
To make sure you get to your goals. Because how many people do you know, and we'll talk about this in the last segment, that they look at the parameters of the plan that you've put together with them, and then find out that when something happens, like a bear market, like a correction, like something, or even a financial struggle in their own lives, instead of downgrading or adjusting their expectations or adjusting their commitment, they just abandon the plan. They just said, this is not working. And that's problematic. Again, it's all about behavior. Look, we're going to take a quick break here on Get Back to Basics Money Talk with Donna Allard and Don Sowa. We'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
We are back with the Money Talk program. We're talking about a little bit of a reality check, and there's so many aspects to checking your reality, and sometimes reality is not what you think. Maybe it's how you feel, and feelings change over time. I mean, Donna, when you do a plan for a client, say a couple comes in, first of all, they're going to learn an awful lot about themselves as part of the planning process. Is there any one element of the plan, like, say, creating a budget or whatever, I mean, that they literally are surprised about, or they consider, well, this is the most important. If I don't do anything, just having created and understand our budget and do a cash flow statement may be the most important reason to have done this.
Yeah, it really is, because, and I say this probably on every show I come on, that people really don't understand how much they're actually spending. And for some people, that's okay, because they know that they're making more than they spend, and it all ends up being positive in their checkbook or bank account at the end of the month. But for other people, it really is an issue, because they're not saving. Maybe they're taking on debt, and they are outspending their income. And so it is a problem. And you have to either take, as you like to say, pen to yellow pad, or, you know, do an export out of your credit card statement, see where you're spending money, do an export out of your bank account online, see where you're spending money, identify areas that you don't need to be spending money so that you're more cognizant of it. It's just like when you're trying to lose weight. When you write down what you're eating and keep it in a food journal and actually see it in front of you, suddenly it becomes real and you're likely to eat less or eat less of those bad things. Same thing, you know, with your spending in your bank account. If you are paying attention and actually seeing the money going out and where it's going, you're going to hold yourself more accountable.
Well, the other thing, too, is, and here we are talking about trying to commit more dollars or new dollars to sizable goals like an independent retirement.
Yeah, if you need to come up with, you know, $450 a month to put into an IRA, you've got to find it in your budget somewhere. And most people, when we go through and I say, all right, what do you spend? What's your income? And I say, okay, well, it looks like you have about, you know, $1,700 or $1,800 a month extra. And they say, no, I don't. I know I don't have $18 a month, $100 a month extra.
Okay, where is the money going?
Yeah. And so that's why that budget is important. Identify ways that you can be more efficient with your money so that you can meet your savings goals.
Now, sometimes, Donna, when you put together an actual financial plan that deals with multiple goals that the client might have for their family.
They could be competing goals.
And again, it may deal with their home, the way they deal with things there. It could deal with education for the kids. It could deal, of course, with the largest of their goals, which is an independent retirement. But you go through all of that, and you say, okay, as we've struggled to really understand that budget and that cash flow statement, yes, we know there's no $1,700, but if you say to do everything you want to do, which is funding the education funding program and that retirement plan, how much money I put into our 401k plans or 403bs at work, knowing that they can reach their goals, knowing that within their financial reality that this is doable, that can be exciting, sometimes distracting to a point where it becomes problematic. If in fact they say, okay, let's do this, they make the commitment to this, start putting money into all these plans and everything else, and then suddenly realize that, you know, finding an extra $600 or $700 a month and putting them into specific savings programs can become, at some point, they discover their burden.
Right, and if that does happen, and which is why I always say to people, you know, your plan's dynamic, it's going to change over time. Well, over that first year, as they're really getting into it, if you get 6 months in and say, all right, I'm meeting the savings goals and I'm, you know, paying for the life insurance you told me I needed and I'm putting the money into the IRAs that I needed, but I'm not able to pay for other things, one of two things happens. Either they'll let you know and we can make adjustments together, or they just abandon it altogether. And that I just feel is so unfortunate. Like, you don't not do something just because you can't do it the way you originally wanted to. Instead, go back and make some adjustments. If you can't make the adjustments in your spending, then all right, let's talk about and see how we can still meet our goals by saving a little bit less. And maybe it means that we have to save for a little bit longer, or maybe it means that you need to figure out an additional stream of income. But talk it out and figure it out, as opposed to just abandoning plans altogether.
Well, the other thing, too, is if you said, okay, for $500 a month into my 401k plan, I can meet that substantial target that we talked about down at my age 65, we can get to that number, which means that I will probably have the ability, at least based on current assumptions, to actually retire comfortably and independently at age 65 or 66 or whatever the number happens to be. Now, you go and you start the plan, you make the commitment, you're putting $500 a month into the plan, which is, by the way, let's look at it honestly, that's $250 a month out of, $250 out of a biweekly paycheck. So that's all of a sudden you say that's $250 I'm not going to have in my take-home pay, but you go into that process and suddenly you say this makes it difficult for us to respond to other problems or opportunities that pop up in everyone's life. But rather than looking at your retirement plan, which you were excited about before, now it's a burden. Now it's a disappointment. Oh, I can't put enough money away to retire. Why don't you say instead, look, what number is absolutely realistic? If 500 is not, how about, is 200 realistic? Now, that may be a massive decline.
You're not going to be retiring when you hope so.
So $100 per pay period is going into the plan. But understand, you're going to be working for the next 30 or plus years. As you get a raise, give your plan a raise.
Yeah.
Move as quickly as you can up to that $500 per month level that you were at, knowing that it may take you years to get there. But in the last few years before you actually retire, the number may not be $500 a month. It may be $750 per month. And the last few years at the higher level, now that you're in a higher income category, will make up for the earlier years that you were starting out with your family and trying to balance and juggle the big retirement plan against a lot of the short-term, intermediate-term needs.
Hey, the government recognizes this. That's why when you turn 50, they have what's called the catch-up contribution. You can put away extra in individual retirement accounts. You can put away extra in your company-sponsored plans because they recognize that maybe you didn't save as much as you could have in those earlier years when you had a lot of expenses and maybe weren't making as much money. Now you've got 15 years left or 17 years left here. Time for the catch up.
Now, when you're going through this whole process of discovering your budget and looking through cash flow statements, really coming to understand yourself on paper, looking at it in a realistic term. And by the way, doing this together, you and your partner, you and your spouse, doing it together so you both understand where the money's coming from, where the money is going, and how it's being spent. You need to both be disciplined and understand that. Otherwise, the plan probably doesn't work particularly well. And by the way, one of the most difficult things that may be part of a great many plans, Donna, is when you say to them, I want you to aggressively pay down those credit cards.
Just threw that one in there at the end.
Threw it
in. Team effort.
It's not just saving. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in tonight to the Get Back to Basics show. Donna Allard and I will be back with more Money Talk going forward. But tomorrow at 5, tune in. Steve Bove will be here with more Money Talk. Have a good evening.